Coming up on Which Way Is Life, episode number 2, my guest today, Dr. Taz. Learn how to make the weekly grind of meal planning and preparing easy, how to ward off disease by turning bad genes off, and how to be mentally strong when it comes to staying healthy. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/whichwayislife. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Which Way Is Life? Your roadmap to a healthier, inspired life. Bill talks with trendsetting doctors, fitness gurus, life coaches, celebrities, athletes, and other interesting experts to help you find the life you want to live. Get inspired. Get healthy. Reconnect with life. Here's Bill Klaproth.
On the show today, Dr. Taz Nimbatia, or as we like to call her, Dr. Taz. Dr. Taz is a physician, associate professor, international lecturer, acupuncturist, and certified nutritionist. She also specializes in integrative and emergency medicine, pediatrics, and prevention with expertise in women's health and weight loss. And if that isn't enough, she has been featured on numerous media outlets, including Today, Access Hollywood, Good Morning America, The Weather Channel, Extra, Live with Kelly, and The Meredith Vieira Show, and is a contributing editor for Prevention Magazine. And Dr. Taz is the author of What Doctors Eat and The 21-Day Belly Fix. Dr. Taz, so happy to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
That's fantastic. Can you let us in on your personal life? Who are you when you're not saving the world? Give us a glimpse of that.
I love that. I am very much a mother and a wife. I have 2 young children. They're 7 and 8. And if I'm not doing the work I love, most of my energy goes into being with them and trying to make sure they're the best human beings they can be and my awesome husband.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Taz, I like to start the show with what I call the one thing. Are you ready?
Yes.
Can you quickly share with us one thing someone can do today to improve their life?
Now, this may strike you as odd, but this answer has evolved for me over the years. The one thing I would recommend everybody to do if they really want to change their life is start with 10 minutes of either meditation or journaling or prayer, whatever they're comfortable with, but 10 minutes every morning. And I promise you, when we talk about health, health is a combination of lots of different things. But if you don't have sort of your emotional world in the right place, it's really hard to process any health information that I may have or any of the other great experts you've got may have. You just are not able to receive it, to process it, and to make it actionable. So by starting with a mindful morning, 10 minutes every day, you pick what that is, you can really see changes in your life because it sets the tone for your entire day and you're able to move through your decision-making much better.
The mindful morning. I love that. What a great name. And you're right. The mental aspect of health is so important. So 10 minutes meditating, journaling, or prayer to start your day. That's terrific. And that's great advice, and it's easy to do and doesn't cost anything.
Right. You can do it anywhere. If you travel.
And anywhere. Right. Yes. Anywhere, which is fantastic. Dr. Taz, thank you for that. With the myriad of good food choices and the knowledge of why health is so important, why is getting healthy and staying healthy so darn hard?
Well, I think it's our lifestyles, honestly. I think that, you know, the culture has really changed. You've got either a lot of single parents or you've got 2 parents that are working. You know, we've gotten out of the kitchen. We don't know how to prepare food or put food together because, again, we're busy and we're stressed and we're trying to make it. And that crosses all levels. It doesn't matter how much money you make or kind of what your position in life is. I've found that that is a common denominator. Everybody is fearful of food, unsure of what to do with food, in too much of a rush, and really looking for convenience and answers. So I think the reason it's so hard is our lifestyles. We don't have the time for it, honestly. It takes time to shop and get the right food. And unfortunately, whether we like it or not, almost 80% of disease links back to food and the foods you eat. You know, the other 20% might be genetics or, you know, other factors, but close to 80% is food. So if we can't get that part right, then we're starting behind, you know, right from the get-go.
Fearful of food. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yes, you know, it's surprising to me because, you know, and I can relate to it at the same time, but so many people I talk to do not know what to do in the kitchen and just don't know anymore how to prepare meals or what to buy. So many times, you know, we'll have a conversation in the exam room or when I'm speaking and I'm like, well, this is kind of the best diet for you. This is really what you need to follow. And they don't even know where to begin. They don't know what to look for in the grocery store. They don't know how to then take that and put it together to make a meal. You know, it's incredibly stressful. So, you know, I've even had patients break down in the room and start crying when I tell them, okay, well, we really need you to, for example, talk about gluten-free. We really need you to be gluten-free. You know, it's really showing that it's having an effect on your inflammatory markers. And they'll break down because that glib sentence to me is to them such a huge stressor and such a huge life change that they have no idea where to start. So I think that, you know, understanding what we're eating, what we're putting into our bodies, and then even understanding how to put the elements of a recipe together, getting America back into the kitchen, that's the only way, because unfortunately, even when we try to make healthy choices eating out, we are still dealing with ingredients and recipes that have a lot of salt, they may have too much sugar, they may have too much fat, and no matter how much navigating you do on that restaurant menu, it's still not the same as the food you prepare on your own, where you have so much more control. So I think that whole divide, it's like this huge bridge, it feels like, for the majority of people I meet, as to, okay, I hear the information, I see the information, I'm not sure in my life with my stressors how I'm going to take this information and turn it into three meals a day that nourish me or nourish my family or nourish somebody else that I love.
Right. So I see it, I hear it, but I don't know exactly what to do with it. And as you said, people find it very stressful and do not know what to do in the kitchen. Can you give us a few tips? How do we get started organizing our meals in a more healthy fashion?
Well, one of the things I do that I find works and that I wish everybody would do is I do take about 30 to 45 minutes out of my week, usually on a Saturday or Sunday, to plan out my meals for the entire week. So I try to have a rough idea of maybe three different breakfasts that we'll have, maybe three different lunches that we'll have. We'll have different dinners and things like that that we constantly can go back to. So I actually take the time to do that, plan it out, and that way I really don't think about it the rest of the week because I'm too busy, I'm running. So I would say the first tip is spend 30 minutes just strategizing. You know, what are some healthy breakfasts? What are some healthy lunches? And then once you're done with that strategy, take maybe an hour on the weekend or an hour on your day off to put those together, you know, and go ahead and have them pre-packed. So we'll have lunches pre-packed, we'll have breakfast pre-packed, and we have dinner sort of halfway prepared. So I think the first step is just understanding what I notice with my patients and even people I work with, that it's an afterthought, like, oh my goodness, what am I going to have for breakfast? Oh my goodness, I haven't, dinner's not ready yet. Oh my goodness, you know, what are we getting for lunch today? So rather than it being the last thought or an afterthought, make it the first thought, you know, make it the first thing. You know, my morning, going back to that mindful morning, I mean, again, setting the tone for that morning, you know, I will meditate or do something that sort of sets me straight. But then the latter part of my morning is spent in food prep for the whole family. Everyone walks out with, you know, breakfast on the table, they have a lunch in their hand, and then we know the dinner menu of the day. But that's purposeful. It's not something I have to do. It's something I choose to do. So again, I think strategizing, you know, planning ahead, packing ahead, and then just making it a priority.
Take 30 to 45 minutes, plan out your meals, three different meals for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Then, you know, take some time, an hour or so, to put them all together. So that's an easy way to start on the path to organize your meals and not being so fearful of food and stressed out about being in the kitchen. Great ideas, Dr. Taz. Thank you for sharing those. In the 21-Day Belly Fix, you talk about reprogramming your digestive system, which is very interesting to me. How does that work? And what's the benefits? What do we need to know about that?
So I think that what many people miss when it comes to their health is how powerful the digestive system is in determining the course of your health. And that's a concept from old systems of medicine. Chinese medicine believed that, Ayurvedic medicine believed that the root of health was really in the gut. Because what happens is, when you are not eating the right foods for you, or you're not digesting those foods well, you're not getting the nutrients you need, and then the other organs like the liver and spleen and things like that take a hit. So the advantage of knowing those systems of medicine, but also having a conventional medical training, is that we can tie everything together, and you've got to have your digestive system in good shape. And if it's not, you know, if it's not processing everything well, then yes, you are going to get sick. And it's interesting that old Eastern concept translates into research, because the research coming out nowadays is all about the microbiome and how the microbiome or the gut bacteria, when it's disrupted by food or stress or the environment or whatever it is, you know, that triggers inflammation, and inflammation really is the root of all diseases today. So it's fascinating to me to see something that was so old play out in research and then play out in our lives in terms of symptoms. And resetting your digestive system is really making sure you're giving the gut a chance to work properly. You're not just bombarding it or stuffing things down it like a kind of like a clogged drain where you keep dumping more and more on it, but not allowing it the time to kind of flow on through. So, I mean, it's really going back to that. And how do we, you know, really make an attempt where the gut has an opportunity to rest, it has an opportunity to heal, it has an opportunity to, you know, really do the job it's supposed to do before it's like, oh my gosh, here comes another load of, you know, animal protein or sugar or alcohol or whatever else is next, you know. So it's a very important principle, and it's very hard to be healthy without getting that part right.
Are there certain foods we should be paying attention to?
There are certain foods we should be paying attention to, and it's a little bit of a conversation per person. But most people do well on what we call an anti-inflammatory diet. And that's a diet that's lower in gluten, lower in dairy, because dairy is very difficult to digest or process, and obviously lower in sugar. Animal protein does take longer and is harder to digest. It doesn't mean that all animal protein is bad. It just simply means that we shouldn't be eating a lot of it. I think a lot of us need it, but we don't need these huge portions. We just need maybe one serving a day. These are some of the ideas that I think everybody can benefit from, is if they start to cut back on some of those key proteins and really monitor their load of the stuff that's hard on the belly to digest, then indirectly you're improving digestive health.
All right, those are great tips. So low in gluten, low in dairy, less animal fat. And trying to create a roadmap here. So think about that when you're taking the 30 to 45 minutes and planning out the meals for the week, how to introduce the better foods into the diet and lessen the bad ones. So this is all tying together terrifically, Dr. Taz. Thank you so much. Another thing that I find very interesting, you talk about how you're able to turn genes on and off, even though you may have a bad gene with diet, exercise, and proper lifestyle choices, you can keep that bad gene off. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I mean, I think that it was said best. I think it was President Obama's Cancer Task Force. That's our report. Where it said basically almost like 90% of cancer is because of genetic mutations that are environmentally induced. You know, so what many people don't connect is that, yes, we all have genes for different things, but those genes are turned on and off, or those mutations happen due to environmental exposures, due to a lack of micronutrients, you know, for so many other reasons other than your genes themselves. So many people will think that, oh, well, I hear this all the time, like, oh, I don't have, you know, we have a gene for this or we have a gene for that. And they take it as a sentence or as a safety. And what they're failing to understand in that is that, you know, our environment, whether that's our cellular environment, you know, our emotional environment, and then our actual external environment, all of those influence what those genes will do.
So really need to pay attention to our environment and choose a healthy lifestyle to keep these bad genes turned off. And those are just general don't smoke, exercise, you know, eat a well-balanced meal. Is there anything else that goes into that?
Well, the general is that, definitely. I mean, I would take it a step further, and I think that's why so many people get frustrated. They're like, well, why did I get sick? I don't smoke. I exercise. I eat healthy. To me, that's like 101, or the preschool of staying healthy, basically, if you think about it that way. I mean, it's really a little bit deeper for people. What we understand is that, you know, we need to look at your load of environmental toxins. You know, how many heavy metals are you getting exposed to? How many volatile organic compounds are you getting exposed to? Are there toxins in your makeup and your hair products and your household products and things like that? Because what we're understanding that it's the cumulative load of some of these environmental toxins that affects the genetics. The second thing that we're understanding is that it's micronutrient deficiencies that affect genetics as well, and they can affect it as early as in utero and at conception. So, for example, if you have, you know, for whatever reason within your chemistry, you're chronically low in B vitamins or chronically low in vitamin D, then years of being in that sort of situation where you have that micronutrient deficiency slowly chips away at some of the other things happening in the body and turns that cancer gene on. I think exposure to chronic stress is a huge, you know, gene activator. So if the stress in your life is not managed well and you've had prolonged, repeated stress, then that can absolutely be something that turns the genetics on. You know, so all of this is something to look at. And then there's, again, the whole debate about our food and how our food is manufactured and if it has any role in sort of the rise in autoimmune disease cancer that we see sort of in this generation.
Those are some really interesting things. Environmental load, individual chemistry, exposure to chronic stress, and basically the food that you're eating. So those are four tips there, four things you really need to pay attention to as you kind of piece together the puzzle of good health. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. And you summed it up very well.
That's good, because usually I don't. So thank you for that. I'm happy to hear that. Dr. Taz, you're also an expert in Ayurveda. You're going to have to start at the beginning on this one with me. Can you briefly give us the overview of Ayurveda and how we can, what we need to know about it and how we can benefit from it?
Right. So when I talk about old systems of medicine, Ayurveda is one of those. Ayurveda is an old Indian system of medicine that's been around for a couple thousand years. And the whole thought with Ayurveda is interesting. They would read people, so to speak, and look at their face, their tongue, their pulse to kind of come up with a type or a diagnosis, and then that diagnosis in turn had a diet that went with it, had certain herbs, certain body treatments that they would benefit from. And it very much, you know, was tied to not all people are the same. And if you know, if you're a particular type, then there's a way to eat. So, you know, the three main types or doshas were kapha, pitta, and vata. And each of those has certain distinct characteristics, and people were either one of those types or a blend of those different types. Now, again, the beauty of understanding Ayurveda and then being able to apply it to conventional medicine is you can take their extensive knowledge of the body and diagnostics and emotionality of different people and tie it to conventional medicine. And it's fascinating to see how certain lab values play out with certain types or how certain diseases play out with certain types. So that's been really, you know, fascinating for me to watch and experience as I see patients, as I bring the Ayurvedic thought process, at least, into talking to patients and dealing with them day in and day out.
You know, we all have to be our own best health advocate. And earlier in your life, you went through a challenging period of your own health in which you became your own health advocate and sought out your own answers. Can you tell us the story of what was happening to you and what did you learn from that?
Definitely. I mean, I think it's, as hard as it was, it's sort of responsible for where I am today. I mean, as physicians, you know, and as young medical students and residents, we sort of are very driven, most of us, and very involved in the world of our training. And as I was going through that, I didn't really realize that I was having issues as I was learning to take care of others. But, you know, through, I think, that process of medical school residency and the early years of working in the emergency room where, you know, we didn't have consistent sleep cycles. I had the worst nutrition you can imagine. I think I write about this in some of my books where I thought popcorn for dinner was healthy because it was low fat, and I thought Diet Cokes were great because there were no calories in them. So, I mean, you combine, you know, the high stress, the lack of sleep, a really, really poor diet. And over the course of the years, you know, started to develop a lot of different issues, most of them hormonal in origin. Like, I started to lose hair, started to have a lot of acne, was gaining weight uncontrollably, a little bit of depression even that went with it. And not really knowing what to do about it and still too busy, honestly, to do anything about it. And then finally, when I, you know, took my first job in Atlanta and moved back here after residency and was with my family a little bit more, they started to get really concerned because they could physically see the change in me. And I started to notice, too, that people would talk to me, but they weren't looking at me. They were looking at my scalp, or they were looking at, you know, the acne on my face or things like that. Then I was sort of motivated to start a journey of trying to figure what was happening. And just the reception I got in the process of trying to get answers was so frustrating. And I know it's still that way. Thousands of patients tell me that all the time. Even today, it's just sort of getting dismissed, or, you know, only people looking only at one thing, not looking at the whole picture, and then not really spending time. And finally, you know, I went to one of the best experts in hair loss, you know, in the city and even one in the country, and was given a medication that drops your blood pressure, but nobody had bothered to check my blood pressure or explain to me some of the side effects. And here I am, a physician, you know, and probably like the average person, I should know more, but I'm just not so dialed into my own health in those days. So took the medication, did what I was kind of told to do, and it dropped my blood pressure so low that I almost passed out. and came very close to getting into a really bad car accident where somebody else could have gotten hurt. So it was just sort of a wake-up call that I kind of needed to be a little more, again, mindful, a little bit more present as to what was happening with me, and a little bit more proactive. So I just started studying and reading different things and, you know, somehow got turned on to Chinese medicine and nutrition first. So those were my early certifications, and then learned more about Ayurveda, and then did the fellowship in integrative medicine, which finally gave me the confidence to start a practice.
Why do we take ourselves for granted? Shouldn't we be trying to put ourselves up higher on the to-do list? You said it right there. I was too busy to do anything about it. How can you reframe that for us? Can you tell us why it's really important that we should put ourselves up higher on our to-do list?
I think that if we don't, and that's the lesson I had to learn, I think if we don't, we're really no good to anybody else. We can't fulfill our mission. We can't fulfill our purpose. We can't find our passion. I think you choose the wrong thing. I mean, not to be too off base, but I almost think you're almost at a lower frequency or an energy level, and you attract the wrong things into your life. I just think that you have a responsibility, you know, it's a responsibility to own yourself and own your own health so you can be the absolute best version of yourself that you can be. And then amazing things really do come into your life. You know, I just feel like I look at my life, I look at the life of a lot of other people that have either been my patients or my friends or things like that. And that's kind of what I see, is that when they're healthy, they are physically healthy, the chemistry's right, then the mind almost works better. Emotionally, you have a better response. And you choose, you make better decisions. You know, you choose the right partner, you choose the right job, you choose, you know, you handle your children better, you know, you handle your neighbors better. You just become a better member of our world. And I think everybody's mission at the end of the day is to really impact the world in some way, whether it's in their immediate circle or in a larger circle. So, and you can't do any of that. You can't do any of it if you're not sort of present within yourself. So that's, I mean, I have this line that I've used, and I firmly believe that your health is a combination. It's your biology, it's your chemistry, it's your will, it's your spirit, it's all of that. There's really no other healthy, and until you get that, you don't live the life that you were meant to live.
So all of those pieces certainly have to fit together to form that great picture of health.
Mm-hmm.
If we're having trouble getting started on the road to health, or we started and keep falling off and restart and fall off and restart, right back into bad habits. Can you share some tips for us to stay mentally strong and on our health plan?
I think the first number one thing is to build a support group, because when we get, you know, demotivated or frustrated, I think it's really helpful to have somebody around you who believes in you and is kind of like leading you on and leading the charge. And that could be a family member, it could be your doctor, it could be your neighbor, it could be your best friend. It doesn't really matter. But I think that all of us struggle at different times. But it's really important to have the right support group. So build a team around you that's built for your success, so that when you get frustrated, the others around you remind you of why you're doing what you're doing. I think it's really important to kind of forgive yourself. There are many patients I meet that it's all or nothing. Like, I'm going to do this diet, or I'm going to eat everything bad inside. I'm going to exercise like a maniac, or I'm going to do nothing at all. And the body and the mind don't really think that way. Everything you do is cumulative. Everything you do is beneficial. So even if you had 10 minutes to exercise, that's still better than zero. If you only ate one good meal that day, but the other two were not so great, that's still better than every meal being junky. So, I mean, just think in terms of cumulative load of happiness and exercise and nutrition and everything like that, and that it's not all or nothing. And I think that sometimes is more encouraging than just thinking like, I have to do this or I can't do that. You know, that would be my biggest advice.
So build a good support group and learn to forgive yourself. It's not always all or nothing. So those are two great tips. Dr. Taz, you're a very accomplished doctor and person. And I'm sure you've had important mentors and people that have coached you and counseled you throughout your career in life. What's the best piece of advice you were ever given?
Best piece of advice I was ever given was to watch my energy, know my boundaries, and never say no to myself. Never believe less in myself. If I have a vision or a thought or a dream, then I really need to be chasing after it.
That's good advice for all of us. Well, coming up, we're going to get the high five from Dr. Taz. And if I could ask a favor, I have one simple goal for this podcast. I want people to walk away with something they've heard to improve their life, to make their life better, to have more meaning, and to have more joy. I want people to have more joy in their life. And even if you just heard one thing, one takeaway from what Dr. Taz is saying, and it improves your life, then we've achieved our goal. So we're trying to reach as many people as possible as we can. If you could, after the interview, jump on over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. That helps more people find the podcast and gives us the opportunity to help more people. And I'd love to hear your comments. Tell me what you're passionate about, what you're concerned about, what you think. I would love that. So if you could, after the interview, take 30 seconds, jump over to iTunes and rate and review the show. Coming up, we're going to get the high five with Dr. Taz. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. And for you, my valued listener, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I'm currently listening to Designing Your Life by Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. It's a really cool book to help you answer the questions we all seem to ask in life and at work. How can I have more meaning and purpose? Something we talk about right here on Which Way Is Life. If you want to check out Designing Your Life, you can download it for free today. Go to audibletrial.com/whichwayislife. Again, you can get it for free. That's audibletrial.com/whichwayislife for your free audio book. Time for the high five with Dr. Taz. Dr. Taz, are you ready?
I am.
Fantastic. Here we go. Number one, if you were sitting at your desk, prescription pad out, and you had to write a prescription for a healthy, balanced life, what would you write?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. If I had to write a prescription for a healthy, balanced life, I would write a sleep prescription. Please sleep at least 8 hours a night.
Question number two, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh, my gosh. There's so much I wish my younger self had done differently. I would have wished my younger self had been a little bit more aware of her physical health. In fact, I cheer when I see young 20-year-old women in my practice. I'm like, I'm so glad you're here. You're going to do great. But I just wish that I'd had more knowledge of what my health needs were and more just knowledge of my physical body. I think I was very disconnected from it.
Start paying attention to your physical and emotional needs at a younger age. Number three, if you had to recommend a book to our audience, what would it be?
Okay, this is going to sound crazy, but I love this book. I'm all about finding your purpose and your passion because I think that's really what motivates people to continue on to their best life. So I love this book called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. She walks you through something called morning pages, which literally helps you dump out a lot of the garbage you might have been carrying around and helps you try to begin the path to living a fulfilled life.
The Artist's Way, is that correct?
Way, W-A-Y.
Way, okay, The Artist's Way. I just want to make sure we get that. Okay, I got to write that one down on the list there. All right, number four, what's your favorite health app or a health resource you can share?
Still, MyFitnessPal. I think it's an easy one to use, and you can record your food and calories and things like that, so I still recommend that.
Okay, FitnessPal, good. Number five, I want you to finish this sentence. In my life, the most important thing I've learned is?
To trust myself. You know, you got to trust that inner voice and trust your instincts and go after what you want and get it done.
Well, that's great advice for all of us. Dr. Taz, thank you so much for your time today. How can we connect with you?
There are a couple different ways. You can go to my website. It's Dr. Taz at drtaz.com. It's drtaz.com. I'm on Twitter, Dr. Taz MD. It's drtazmd. And then we're on Facebook as well.
That's fantastic. Dr. Taz, thank you again so much. And remember, enjoy the little things in life because one day you will look back and realize they were the big things. Thank you so much again, Dr. Taz, and thank you for listening to this podcast. Remember to catch every episode of Which Way Is Life. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or my show page at RadioMD.com. And if I can ask a quick favor, please take 30 seconds and rate the podcast on iTunes. Jump over there. Do that now. The reason being is we want to attract more people like you to the show, and the only way we can do that is if you rate it, which helps the show gain more visibility. And I'd love it if you would leave a review as well. If you could do that for me, I would greatly appreciate it. Which Way Is Life is produced by RadioMD.com, award-winning health podcast. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way Is Life on Twitter. You can also check out the show notes at RadioMD.com for all of my episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.